All right, good morning. We're going to go ahead and get started. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Loudoun County Grant Application Training Series. This is session two of three. Session two is on data collection. Session one focused more on the narrative piece of a grant application. The link in the chat will bring you to our webpage. If you missed the first session, the PowerPoint and the recording of that can be found there. So feel free to access that. Session two, the agenda for today, we're going to cover the purpose, the importance of using data in a grant application, using effective data. We're going to talk about a need statement and how data can influence that need statement, using stats, developing a logic model and how that rolls into the application piece, and then preparation, collection, and reporting, all using data for that. The purpose of the training, particularly this session, is to gain understanding of the importance of data and utilizing data effectively to support a successful grant application. And with that, I just want to say that these are general best practices and guidelines that are not specific to any grant at the federal, state, or local level. With that, I'm going to introduce my two colleagues with me today. I have Christine Powers, who is our ARPA coordinator, and Andrea Pineda, who is our ARPA nonprofit grant specialist. They will be providing majority of the presentation. If you have any questions along the way, feel free to raise your hand. We can call on you as we go along. There will be time at the end of the session for questions and answers, but if you have a question that's relevant to what we're speaking to, feel free to raise your hand or put your question in the chat and we'll answer it as we go along. Again, if you're just signing on, please put your name and organization in the chat, and we'll go from there. I'll turn it over to Christine.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to session two on the importance of data. Today, we're going to talk about kind of some thick subject matter when it comes to data and how to use that in your grant applications. Data is crucial in crafting a grant narrative, a need statement, and an evaluation because it provides you concrete evidence to support your claims, and it demonstrates the scale and urgency of a problem that you're addressing. It will build credibility for your funders, and it will convince your funders that your proposed project will have a significant and measurable impact, making your proposal more persuasive and more likely to be funded. So data is not just for evaluation. So it can be utilized to strengthen your grant request during the pre-award phase of the grant process, but it can be used for planning. So it can be used to identify a problem that can potentially be mitigated using grant funds. It can define the problem, and data can help to illuminate the population you intend to serve and the efficacy of the approach you intend to use. It informs your proposed goals and objectives. Data provides concrete support for identifying clear and concise goals and objectives. So why do your funders need data? So the data can provide evidence that the programmatic outcomes are in alignment between your organization and the funder. It can serve as evidence that the services your organization provides are needed. The data can illustrate the depth and breadth of the work that your organization does, and it provides evidence that the program is effective and that it works. Data can also provide justification for the cost associated with the program implementation, which ultimately helps you increase the likelihood that you will secure funding. During reporting, it validates the funder's decision to award those funds. So, when you have that data, how do you use this data effectively? Do you use this data for effective storytelling? So why is data most effective for telling your story? Whether you're proposing work or reporting on work that you've already accomplished, the data will hold the audience's attention better than just simple words and statistics, and it provides a way to get your point across quickly. Using the data to lay the foundation of your story means that the insight you're sharing has come from the facts that you've gathered, and it establishes credibility with your claims. It can help you get to your main point, and your main point should focus on an overarching insight that you've gleaned from those facts and should not confuse the audience with too many extraneous details. It can also help your audience focus on the explanation so that it's understandable to the listener. Rather than just describing the issue, you are providing insight. In other words, answering the how and the why rather than just the who, what, when, and where. Lastly, you should sequence your data in a linear manner, introducing data points in a sequential fashion and letting them build support for your overarching insight. A couple different types of data. You're probably familiar with qualitative versus quantitative. So your qualitative data can be used to enrich your context and detailed insight into the needs, experiences, and perspective of the population that you're serving. It allows you to craft a compelling and impactful proposal by illustrating the why behind the problem and the nuances of the situation beyond just the statistics. Examples of qualitative data include client testimonials, staff observation, and success stories. Your quantitative data will explain the depth of your issue and is aiming to respond to that you're aiming to respond to in your storytelling. These are specific numbers used to support your need statements, your program description, or your outcomes. Examples include the number of clients served or the percent of the population at below a poverty level, for example. And with that, I'm going to hand it over to Andrea to talk to you about a need statement and how to build a great need statement for your proposal.
Thanks, Christine. So for those of you who attended the last RTOT training session, we went over the proposal narrative, which included the need statement. If you missed the link that was put in the chat, please let us know and we can resend it via chat. So a need statement is a critical part of your proposal narrative because it captures the funder's attention and introduces them to the problem you are trying to solve. So in this section, I'm going to go over how to use data to bolster your need statement and strengthen this section as it is an introduction to the funder. First, I'm going to do a quick refresher. So what is a need statement? It is also called the problem statement or statement of need, and it provides the rationale for your request. It explains why your project deserves funding, and it clearly defines the problem or gap you are addressing, who is affected, why it matters, and what happens if that problem is not addressed. Next slide, please. So a strong need statement can use both quantitative data and qualitative data. So the quantitative data can show the scope and the scale, and then the qualitative data can show the human impact and the lived experience of that could be it could be interviews, it could be survey results, but it can help humanize that issue. As Christine discussed, this data can help your story be more credible. So to help visualize this, I have a fictional program or project that that is included in a fictional proposal narrative. And this project is called Inclusive Pathways to Employment. It provides workforce readiness and skills coaching for people with disabilities. Next slide, please. So here I have an example of a potential need statement for that project, and I'm just going to read through it. If you could listen and take a look and we'll kind of go through what works and what is missing. So since 2015, Inclusive Pathways Network, or IPN, has been building the Inclusive Pathways to Employment program to provide effective evidence-based workforce supports for individuals with disabilities. In 2024, the service expanded to include youth participants transitioning out of school. Due to a limit in staffing hours, we were only able to support 25% of referrals. Research shows that individualized employment supports for people with disabilities increases the likelihood of job placement retention and long-term career success. While services are available to all participants with disabilities, this project will focus on services for youth individuals 17 to 25 facing employment barriers. In 2024, 15 youth participants received services. In Loudoun County, the estimated number of youth in need by barrier area compared to the program current capacity is, and then it includes a table that demonstrates those different barrier areas, how many youth are, an estimate of how many youth are in need, as well as how many are able to be served by this program. So what works in this example? So first, it starts off with the year that it was established, which does give some credibility. It provides some history that this program has been around for some time, and it seems to, I guess the implication is that it works. Then it includes the program purpose and the rationale for needing the funding. It includes some data to support that problem, or that rationale. So the research shows that individualized employment support for people with disabilities increases the likelihood of job placement, retention, and long-term career success. So there's one source of data. Then the last paragraph, it highlights the project focus and includes a table of the local need and current capacity without additional funding, which demonstrates that service gap. So this need statement is a good one, but it can be stronger. So in the next slide, I have a different example, and I'm just going to quickly read through it. So youth with disabilities in Loudoun County face significant barriers to workforce entry, including limited work experience, low job readiness, transportation challenges, and cognitive or mental health needs. Among youth ages 17 to 25 transitioning out of school, an estimated 350 require employment support annually, yet in 2024, the Inclusive Pathways to Employment program served only 15 youth, roughly 4% of those in need. Nationally, only 20% of working age individuals with disabilities are employed, compared to 65% of peers without disabilities, and youth with multiple barriers are nearly three times more likely to be unemployed. Research demonstrates that supported employment programs can increase placement rates by 50 to 70% and improve retention for youth with disabilities, showing that IPE has proven potential to close this gap. Then the narrative continues, and then it includes the current interventions, the effectiveness, and why funding is needed to grow the program in need. So IPE provides individualized career coaching, job readiness workshops, supported placement, and employer coordination. Early outcomes indicate participants are three times more likely to secure employment and retain positions beyond the first 90 days while gaining confidence, workplace communication, and self-advocacy skills. Current part-time staffing limits services, leaving most youth without support. Additional funding will expand staff, scale employer partnerships, and provide ongoing post-placement coaching, closing the gap between need and access while improving long-term workforce outcomes. So when we compare this need statement to the previous one, you'll notice that in the first paragraph, in addition to providing information about the problem at hand, more research is cited about the disproportionate impacts. First, there is a need that outnumbers the services. And then data is used to demonstrate the disparity between individuals with disabilities and those without, as well as data to demonstrate the impact of the issue. So where it says, and youth with multiple barriers are nearly three times more likely to be unemployed. The last line of the first paragraph provides additional rationale for why this intervention works and that it's evidence-based. So the last sentence, research demonstrates X, Y, and Z. Then in the last paragraph, it shows the past success of this program and why they want to expand. So that establishes credibility for this applicant and the reason why funding is needed. And if the earlier data and research were not provided, simply stating that funding is needed would not be enough to convince a funder or evaluator, especially one that's reviewing hundreds of applications. So this version of the applicant's need statement is much stronger because it's specific. It uses quantitative data to show the scale. It includes research citations to show that it is evidence-based. It demonstrates the disproportionate impact and shows a clear service gap. It also provides outcome data to establish credibility and helps the evaluator visualize what would be the result of this intervention. It clearly connects additional funding to measurable improvement, and it doesn't just describe a problem, but it makes the urgency undeniable and the solution seem logical. Next slide, please. So before we move on to the next sections, since many of you are interested in applying for the RTOT grant, I wanted to give you an example or some reminders for creating a need statement that is focused on tourism. So when crafting a need statement for this type of project or event, the focus needs to be on increasing tourism. So you want to use data to demonstrate the gap and need for funding, such as low off-season occupancy or a lack of diverse attraction, which hinders economic growth. You want to make sure that you clearly state the issue or specific tourism problem. For example, the community lacks marketing for winter attractions, which results in a 40% drop in hotel occupancy between the months of November and March. It's supported with data, so you can use specific numbers. You can use like hotel occupancy rates, visitor spending data, survey results. This helps quantify that issue. Explain who is affected. So are local businesses affected, hospitality staff? What are the consequences if no action is taken? And then you can explain why this funding is needed. So for example, to capture a new market trend or prevent further economic decline. This would be the reasoning for needing that funding. And lastly, you want to connect the need directly to the grant objectives. So this is focused on tourism, so that you need to make sure that you connect it to increasing tourism, whether those are visitor numbers, extending stays, or promoting local culture. So here I have an example of a need statement. I'm just going to quickly read through it. Despite its rich cultural history and strong base of hospitality businesses, the city of, and you can put the city name, lacks the marketing capacity and event investment necessary to fully leverage tourism generating opportunities within blank city. Although the region continues to experience steady growth in overnight visitation, city name's hotel occupancy rate remains 50% lower than neighboring localities, limiting visitor spending and economic impact within this community. This disparity reflects insufficient targeted promotion and a lack of large scale destination driving events that encourage overnight stays. The proposed event or festival name addresses this gap by attracting out of area visitors and driving overnight stays. Without financial support, the city cannot implement the regional marketing and enhanced programming needed to make maximize tourism impact. As a result, local hospitality businesses risk missing critical spending, visitor spending, and the city could forego an estimated amount of blank dollars in annual tax revenue tied to event-driven travel. So this need statement, it describes the problem, what is in the way of producing the intended outcome, which is increasing tourism. It uses measurable data. So here it uses the hotel occupancy rate, which highlights the disparity between this city and neighboring localities. It also talks about how the proposed event or project will address this gap. And then it talks about what may happen if the event does not have financial support, including the impact of this. So to conclude, effective need statements use data to effectively define the need, provide evidence to support that need, provide evidence to support the proposed solution, and demonstrate the urgency or need for funding. And now I'm going to hand it over to Christine, who will go over how to use statistics.
Before we move on, I just want to pause for a moment to ask if anybody has any questions. We've gone through a lot of information, so I just want to take a pause to see any questions, comments, concerns. And seeing none, we'll continue to move forward. Thank you, Christine.
Thank you. Thank you, Andrea. So in this section, we're going to talk a little bit about statistics and giving you some ways of using data in your need statement, in your application, or just to create that great narrative that describes your situation, your problem, that sort of thing. So this is also just a very high level way of using statistics. It's also a way to help you kind of get through a lot of the data that you'll find to help support your statement. So this might not necessarily be data that you as an organization create and establish. It might be just looking through data provided by different sources like your census data, industry data through the tourism or maybe the Department of Economic Development, just so you know how to read that information and how to then digest and use it in your proposals. So when you're making a claim, you need to provide evidence for that connection. So as Andrea described in the need statement and in previous slides, talking about using data to boost your narrative. So you are going to use the evidence that you find in this data. A measure of central tendency, that's a term that you'll see, which is like your mean, median, and mode. And this might take everybody back to high school math. These are used to identify an average or center point among a data set. They describe the characteristics of data, who they are, how many. And a measure of the dispersion or variability, like variance and standard deviation, skewness or range, these reflect the spread in the data points. So a measure of distribution, like the quantity or percentage of a particular outcome, these express the frequency that the outcome has among the data set. Inferential is often used in grant applications as a comparison to what is currently happening, or previous results, or differences between samples. So your hypothesis tests or tests of significance, these involve confirming whether certain results are significant and not simply by chance. Your correlation analysis helps determine the relationship or correlation between variables, basically saying if then this. Logistic or linear regression analysis. These methods enable inferring and predicting causality and other relationships between variables. Confidence intervals. These help identify the probability an estimated outcome will occur. I will have, there's some links that we are also going to provide in the chat that provide some more tutorials that will help you understand these terms and kind of give you a little extra boost in your knowledge. And there's a tutorial for nonprofits and other organizations. I know from personal experience, sometimes going through census data can be pretty daunting. So this helps to kind of understand where information is coming from and how to digest a lot of the numbers that are being displayed. So, and then when you make a claim, you provide evidence. So in here, we're showing the correlation and the trends. So you also want to see that your correlation analysis is showing that relationship. So what you're going to say in, as we're talking about in a need statement, if we know that we have an issue at hand, there's a service gap, or we have an unknown variable, that means that, you know, like in the example with the towns and the hotel, we know that there's a disparity between one town and another as far as hotel stays. What we want to say is that we know that there may be better results through different activities. So if we can make that correlation that we've seen certain evidence play out in different areas, we can make those assumptions about our own problem statement that we've seen these things happen and these results take place in these other jurisdictions, these other activities, and we are confident that that can be a result here. So you're also going to see your trends, and this is also a good way to showcase a comparison and a correlation. If you know that there are certain trends happening on a national or state level, then we can make those correlations at a local level as well. We know that there's information to be had at the state level for tourism data, and we can make demographic inferences based on our population here in Loudoun County. So if you can make those connections based on previous studies and statistics to your own problem statement and your own grant application, those are very helpful in not only in your storytelling, but showing how your proposed actions will produce results. And here's just another a way of displaying that sample, the inferential statistics. So you have population samples, and this is might be where sometimes the census data will be helpful as well. Census data gets down to census tracts and county level. So you can be very detailed about the population in your area and how it plays out in tourism data. If you know that there are market trends and there's a small group of population that you want to target, and you can show that by targeting those that sample, that small population will help to boost your results, then this is a way to do that as well. So what your funders are going to need is your community data. This is data describing the need context of your community and your target population. Your program evaluation will to discuss your resources, your inputs, your outputs, your outcomes, your logic model, and your evaluation plan. And as Andrea mentioned earlier, having evidence-based research is also very helpful. This is where tourism information and market trends will be very helpful in your grant applications. So we're going to discuss the logic model, and we did discuss this in the first grant application training at a high level. And here we're going to go over some examples that are a little bit more detailed. I apologize if this is very small print. This is an example that is going to kind of show you how we've used this model in the past. So I'll walk through this a little bit more for you, and these slides will be available for you so you can see these on your own time. But I'm going to use the example here of the American Rescue Plan Act. So the county received a grant from the federal government to recover from the pandemic. And through that, the federal government had their own goals with this stimulus package. And within that, those parameters, the county determined how it wanted to address the pandemic. So we had our inputs. So these are our resources that went into these programs. So we have the WHO, we had county staff, we had nonprofit organizations, small businesses, and our what were programs and different activities that we used. So we had rental assistance, utility assistance, we had educational supports for children who were maybe missing out because of school closures. We had made sure to support any service interruptions due to stay-at-home orders. There were other temporary staff to help to kind of get to support nonprofits in what they saw as a huge increase in need in the community. Other activities, we had competitive funding for other nonprofits in the area, and the county staff had funded those nonprofits, and we also had small business supports. So there was a lot of activities spread across a lot of different areas within the county. Outputs were more of the immediate outputs. So we had competitive funding, and our immediate output was grant programs and grant awards paid out to different organizations to support different programming. So the immediate outputs are the results of those activities, and how those results are measured depends on the goals of the program itself and then the goals of the overall grants program. We measured short-term outcomes based on grant programs duration and how we could measure results within maybe 1 year's time, 6 months to 1 year's time. Were we seeing businesses stay open because of their additional supports? Did we see nonprofits that were able to assist more and more residents in the area that needed help? Then when we get to the midterm outcomes, maybe another year in the future, did we see a fewer people that needed assistance because they were more stable? Did we see people get back to work in a timely manner and have more stability in the household? So, and then even longer term impacts, 3 years and beyond, what do we see of those impacts? And do we see positive impacts or the avoidances of negative impacts based on the financial support and the programs that were established? Another example we show here is the people and roles in the activities involved. So what you're going to see in your inputs is your people and activities. So what goes into it? So you have money, that's one resource. Your staff is another resource, but these are also resources that might not be obvious. You have an organization that maybe is partnering with you on an event or an initiative. So that's another input, those partnerships. And then your outputs, what do those things lead to? So when you know you have an outcome and you know you have steps to take to get there, those outputs might simply be you have meetings with your partners. You start establishing tasks involved with these activities, and you establish that kind of project plan at the beginning. That's an output because you know that you have an activity in place. You have your marching orders to get things moving. And then you want to see your short-term outcomes. So what's happening as a result of those meetings? You have communication plan. You have a timeline of tasks to get an event in place. Your medium-term outcomes could even be you put your event in place, you had your activity in place, and that's how you were able to, you know, perform your event and put that on. And your longer term outcomes, you might see not only did that event increase our attendance, but we also were able to gather more insights about the participants. And we were able to get some results based on the additional marketing or targeted marketing or something like that. So getting that in, those outcomes on a medium term basis will help lay the foundation for longer term goals. So sometimes it's helpful to work backwards as well. If you know you have a goal in mind and you know where you want to be, and that outcome you know is probably a year or two in advance, working backwards will help you lay out the logic model where you know that you need to put certain steps in place to get to your outcome. So in preparation, in collection, and reporting, this is where your data gets digested and prepared to showcase within a grant application or in your reporting. So when you, your data collection will play a vital role. This will inform your organization's strategies to align with your mission and the evaluation success. So when you're preparing your approach to data collection, you start with the following questions. What does my community need? How should I target my services? Who am I serving? Is my program effective? Is my program making an impact? This table here on the slide will provide a methodology for preparing collection of data, and you can begin with those questions. For example, when you understand the needs of your community you intend to serve, this helps inform your organization's mission and the design of your program and your organization's capacity to do the work. You can use several methods to assess the current and critical needs of your community, and a needs assessment survey will collect community feedback on existing gaps and existing community data. This data can be collected from a needs assessment that's already been conducted by organizations, such as your industry information. And it can be demographic information that's already been collected and can provide information related to your area of work. And an example, of course, of publicly available demographic data is the census. So in the previous example for the logic model, we used an example that covered the ARPA funding. So in that sense, we use data to inform our future investments or even to know that our current investment is working. So we have obviously many residents that were affected by the pandemic, and we used data to help us determine whether those residents were being served and whether the assistance provided in the short term was allowing for long-term stability. So that data has been very informative for the county and for nonprofits that were doing a lot of the work in how we were serving our clients. So a lot of data had been collected over the duration of the ARPA program to help us determine those needs that were happening, how to address those needs, and whether or not we were making an impact. So back to the preparation table. When we look at the last two rows, we are asking if our program is effective and if it's making an impact. So if you are to determine success or if your program is working, it helps to determine the progress towards your benchmark and your organization's approach to evaluation, as well as the outcomes that you expect to achieve. So you may collect data through client assessments in the form of post surveys. A logic model is a great tool not only to visualize your process, but to assess your programs. Do your inputs and outputs lead to outcomes that you hope to achieve? And does this align with your community or your mission? Does it align with the grant funder's mission as well? Similar to kind of solving a math equation, you can work backwards from your intended outcomes to help to see if you achieved the result that you needed. So did you end up with the result that you initially hoped to achieve? So these methodologies not only guide your organization's actions, but ensure that you are responsive to the needs of those that you serve in an accurate and evidence-based manner. So this is, slide will contain a methodology for preparing a data collection table. And just to note, I used an acronym in here, unfortunately, just in case you are not familiar with acronyms, this one is strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. So that's something that are both within and without your organization. So sometimes collecting that data will help to kind of identify gaps that are maybe within your own program or external factors that may be causing an issue or an opportunity that you may be able to take advantage of. We also, and we'll provide this link in the chat as well, Loudoun County has a data toolkit that can help you. It's compiled from many different sources that organizations use in applying for funding. Also keep in mind that if you're looking at tourism data, there are many resources within Loudoun County. We have the Department of Economic Development. We have Visit Loudoun. These are resources that are very helpful in for industry data, market trends, that sort of thing. So there are a lot of resources out there for everybody. Oh, is that showing up blank?
It is.
That's... It might have an animation, so maybe.
Oh, well, apologies. How can I fix this?
I think if you click, press like click, it might show. Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. I'm just going to, there we go. Thank you, Andrea. So after you receive your grant award, because you all are going to write the most spectacular proposals, you should be collecting data throughout your grant period. So this data will help support the activities, objectives, and outcomes described in your approved application. This will also likely be outlined in your grant agreement. So be very thoughtful in going over the grant agreement itself. If there's a, within the application, if there's a manual or even in the notice of funding opportunity, a lot of times there is key information in there that will help guide you on the types of data that you need to collect, not only for reporting, but just for your own evaluation methods. So if your project was partially funded, the details in your grant agreement are especially important as the scale of your objectives and activities and outcomes will likely differ from the original application. So grantee reporting helps the grantee and the funder measure success, better allocate resources, and make more just strategic decisions. Data to report is based on your funded application or grant agreement's outlined performance indicators. It reflects the proposed work described in your approved application or grant agreement. It measures success and the impact resulting from award, and it ensures adherence to the funded project activities. It helps to demonstrate compliance with the grant guidelines. And lastly, it provides proof of the community need and additional gaps that may need to be filled. So a lot of times the reporting is also an opportunity for you to inform your funder if there are any other trends that you are observing in the performance of this grant. And that might be more helpful information for your funder. We will take this time to address any questions. I know that was a lot of information, and with the additional links in the chat, hopefully you have some tools to help you going forward. So at this point, if there are any other questions, we'll just take a moment and let people raise their hand or put some questions in the chat. Barb, is there anything else? I don't know if there was anything that came in through the chat, if there was any other information you wanted to pass along before we wrap up today.
There are no questions in the chat, and I don't see any raised hands. Just want to say thank you. We have session 3 coming up on March 4th. That will be specifically in regards to the RTOT application. So we'll go through the manual eligibility. We'll also walk through the application itself in our grants management system. The application will be released March 2nd. So you'll have a few days to look at it prior to the training, specifically on that on March 4th. So other than that, thank you for your time, and we look forward to seeing you next week and reviewing your applications.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.